Imagine trying to sell a deteriorating tiger shark carcass for $12 million. This was Charles Saatchi's challenge when offloading Damien Hirst's iconic work, a 15-foot shark suspended in formaldehyde that had turned greenish and wrinkled since its 1992 debut. Despite its condition, hedge fund billionaire Steve Cohen eventually purchased it for a reported $12 million, representing merely 5 days' income for a man earning approximately $500 million annually. The shark's provocative title, The Physical Impossibility of Death in the Mind of Someone Living, proved perhaps more valuable than the decomposing specimen itself. This transaction epitomizes the contemporary art market's fascinating paradox: objects with questionable artistic merit commanding astronomical prices. What drives someone to pay millions for something many wouldn't consider art? The answer lies in a complex ecosystem where insecurity, branding, and status seeking create extraordinary value from seemingly ordinary objects. The contemporary art world thrives on insecurity. Wealthy collectors, lacking time for deep artistic understanding, seek reassurance through branding when making purchases. Rather than focusing on traditional artistic qualities, the market emphasizes innovation, investment potential, and an artist's current popularity. Gallery branding significantly impacts prices. An artist's work might fetch $4,000 at an unknown gallery, but $12,000 at a prestigious one, with buyers paying for the dealer's reputation. Once artists become brands themselves, like An Kawara, their work commands high prices regardless of merit, as demonstrated by a $310,000 sale for one of his 2,000 similar date paintings. Major auction houses add another premium. In May 2007, Sotheby's achieved record sales of $255 million, highlighted by Mark Rothko's White Center from David Rockefeller's collection, which sold for $72.8 million, up from its original $8,500 price. For the ultra-wealthy, contemporary art serves as the ultimate status symbol, with branded pieces offering unmatched prestige. Branded dealers establish high-priced artists from imposing white cube galleries that discourage casual browsers. In this unregulated trade, success demands capital, connections, and promotional prowess. Joseph Henry Duveen pioneered art marketing by selling social status through old masters. Ambrose Vollard launched impressionists like Picasso and Van Gogh, while Leo Castelli transformed dealing by discovering Johns and Rauschenberg. Castelli's brand became so powerful that collectors sought a Castelli rather than specific works. Modern dealer Larry Gagosian leverages resources and connections to work with established artists. His influence is clear. John Curran's work value jumped 14-fold in 18 months after joining his gallery. Top dealers strategically place art with museums and prominent collectors before offering to regular clients. Damien Hirst revolutionized artistic success, accumulating $100 million by 40, more than Picasso, Warhol, and Dali combined at that age. After initial rejections, he attended Goldsmiths College, where his 1988 Frieze exhibition launched both his career and the Young British Artists movement, catching Charles Saatchi's eye. Museum officials, wealthy buyers, and eager collectors fill the reserved seats at major auctions. The process reassures newcomers through authoritative catalogs and the social proof of seeing sophisticated buyers pursue works. Auctioneers maintain a precise rhythm of one bid every 2 seconds, creating urgency while allowing for decisions. As bidding intensifies, ego takes over, with auctioneers exploiting this through phrases like, "Last bid, are you sure? No regrets?" They connect personally with bidders, using first names and reading body language. Though bidders set maximum prices beforehand, these limits often dissolve once bidding begins. When someone becomes the high bidder, the endowment effect kicks in. They shift from having money to feeling ownership of the artwork, making the fear of loss override financial sense. the highest prices emerge when two collectors commit to bid to get until victory. As one specialist puts it, heaven is two Russian oligarchs bidding against each other, illustrated by the 2006 sale of Picasso's Dora Maar for $95.2 million, where persistence won the day. Hirst's work encompasses six main categories: dead animals in formaldehyde, natural history series, cabinets of surgical tools and pill bottles, pharmaceutical-named spot paintings, spin paintings on potter's wheels, butterfly wing compositions, and photorealist paintings of violent death. He openly acknowledges using assistants for production, preferring to separate ideas from execution through a factory-like approach. His business savvy emerged in ventures like the Pharmacy Restaurant in Notting Hill. After its closure in 2003, Sotheby's transformed mundane restaurant items into valuable art pieces. Six ashtrays sold for $1,600, two martini glasses for $4,800. Having bought back his art from bankruptcy receivers for $5,000, Hirst made more in one auction than the restaurant's entire six-year operation. His most ambitious piece, For the Love of God, a diamond-encrusted platinum skull, sold to investors for $50 million, with Hirst maintaining a 24% stake. Art prices function primarily as status signals rather than reflecting production costs. In a market with limited information, prices indicate artist reputation and dealer standing, with size being a key pricing factor to provide buyer certainty. New artists at mainstream galleries typically start at $3,000 to $6,000. Prices increase systematically, $4,000 for first shows, $6,000 for second, and $10,000, $12,000 for third, with shows spaced 18 to 24 months apart. The market's cardinal rule is never reducing list prices, as decreases signal declining status. During downturns, galleries maintain prices but offer larger discounts. Popular artists use waiting lists to create scarcity, prioritizing museums and important collectors. Art rarely appreciates in value and carries significant costs: dealer markups, commissions, insurance, storage, and taxes. Market volatility is exemplified by the 1990 Impressionist crash, when Roe Saito's record purchases preceded a collapse where values fell to 45% of peak, taking 15 years to recover. The $12 million stuffed shark demonstrates how art value emerges from branding, scarcity, celebrity, and institutional validation. Museums serve as gatekeepers, their selections actively shaping artistic reputations, as when MoMA's acquisition of Jasper Johns's work established his prominence. While successes like Adam Sender's $1.4 million Curran profit make headlines, market failures often go unreported. Even prestigious collections face losses. Monet's Le Grand Canal sold for less in 2005 than in 1989, and Charles Saatchi typically loses money on 40% of purchases. Art investment funds have mixed track records. Though early ventures like the 1904 French Fund succeeded, many others failed, with major banks losing hundreds of millions. Even Picasso's work showed diminishing returns at premium prices. Today's market shows more resilience than during the 1990 crash, supported by a 20-fold expansion in collectors and global wealth concentration. With numerous billionaires worldwide and new museums planning acquisitions, the market enjoys broad international support. This ecosystem reveals that art value is socially constructed rather than inherent. A contemporary artwork's price reflects an intricate dance between dealers, collectors, artists, and institutions, where perception becomes reality and can transform a dead shark into a multi-million-dollar masterpiece.